It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Every week at this time, Lucky Strike presents a four-ring quiz circus. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of duplication, Information Please uses the question that was received first, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, Information Please is a completely unrehearsed and spontaneous performance. And this evening, our performers include the inexhaustible trio, Franklin P. Adams, conductor of the New York Post Conning Tower, John Kieran, sports expert and author of John Kieran's Nature Notes, and Oscar Levant, pianist, composer, author, screen star, and what have you. Our guest this evening is the distinguished actor, Philip Merivale, now appearing in New York in S.N. Behrman's latest play, The Tally Method. Now remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25, and that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. With which simple rules, we're ready to begin this evening's performance and start with a question from Catherine T. Bell of Birmingham, Alabama. Now, this concerns famous rivals in fiction. What I'll do is to name one of the pair of rivals, and you are to name his probably better-known competitor. That's very clear, isn't it? Now, the first is Christian de Neuvillette. Who was his more famous competitor? Mr. Curran.
Cyrano de Bergerac.
Cyrano de Bergerac. They were rivals for the hand of whom?
Roxanne.
Roxanne, yes. Mr. Merivale and Mr. Adams both had their hands up to answer that. In whose famous play, Mr. Kieran?
Roxanne, Cyrano de Bergerac.
Very good, that's right. That gives you a perfect response, Mr. Kieran. Now, here's the next. Here's a rival, Mark Eisen. Who was his more famous competitor? Mark Eisen, Mr. Adams. All right, so far.
I think that was in a book by A.S.M. Hutchinson.
What makes you think that? Because the first name is Mark.
That's all.
Yes, but the last name was different. You're thinking of Mark somebody and it's Winter Comes.
Saber.
Thank you, Mr. Merivale. No, the Mark Eisen
case. Oh, wait a minute.
All right, Mr. Adams, another chance. Got one
recent,
bad Mark so far.
Comparatively recent book.
Yes, that's right. Vague, but correct. Any other suggestions, gentlemen? Want to help Mr. Adams out? I'm sorry. It's the more famous rival is Wynn Strafford in Mr. Christopher Morley's bestseller, Kitty Foyle. You were going to say that, Miss Adams, weren't you? That gives us one wrong. Now, how about this? The Prince of Morocco. Who is his more famous rival? We have several hands. Mr. Merivale.
Bassanio.
Bassanio. Where do you find these rivals?
Merchant of Venice.
In the Merchant of Venice. By whom, Mr. Merivale?
William Shakespeare.
Neatly said. And the fourth of these rivals, Cobina. Cobina? Mr. LeBanc.
Brandon, but that's not literature.
Well, for you it is, Mr. LeBanc.
And they say I'm rude. Oh.
Where do you find Brandon and Cobina?
Well, you find them more places than you think, but once a week on Bob Hope.
On Bob Hope's
not
radio,
on Bob Hope, on Bob Hope's program.
Yes, that's right. That gives us 3 out of 4. And sends us on to the next question from Helen Hull Hyde of Buffalo, New York. Get all on this, gentlemen, if you can. Name the head officers under President Roosevelt of the United States Army, Navy, and Aviation Forces. Of course, he's the titular head of all of them. But of the Army, Mr. Kieran, want to start us off?
General Marshall.
General Marshall. What's he called? What's
Chief
his title?
Chief of Staff.
Chief of Staff. That's quite right. Now, how about the Navy, gentlemen? Mr. LeBanc.
No, I was thinking of Knox.
No.
Leahy was. No. Can you imagine if I were trying to answer?
Oh, this isn't it. You're not trying to answer, eh? Gentlemen, how about another guess? I think we should know the Chief of Naval Operations of our country. Rear Admiral Stark.
That's right.
Rear Admiral Stark. That gives us one wrong. And who is the head of the Aviation Force? Now, there might be two possible answers.
Oh, I know.
Mr. Levant?
Arnold?
Arnold is right.
Yeah.
Head of the Air Corps in the War Department.
The only reason I know, he just left for abroad.
That's right. He's been in the papers. Don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody, Mr. Levant. Let's keep on naval and military secrets. The Chief of the Bureau of Aeronautics in the Navy Department is Rear Admiral John H. Towers, and perhaps either General Arnold or
Admiral Towers might be named. Well, that loses us $25 in a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike, and sends us on to the next question from Louis Gold of Brooklyn, New York. Again, gentlemen, get 2 out of 3 if you can. Now, if you were a Shakespearean actor, which is going to be tough on 3 of you, and heard these cue lines, what famous speeches would you make following the cue lines? Is that clear? Here's the first cue line. On what compulsion must I? Tell me that. Mr. Merivale.
The quality of mercy is not strange.
Beautiful. Would you come on with it? Give us the rest of it, Mr. Merivale.
Drop it is the gentle rain from heaven upon the earth beneath. You are it, Baldwin.
I'd love to have another line of it.
What? It is twice blessed. It blesseth him that gives and him that takes.
Yes, very good. Who is it that says that?
Portia.
Portia, yes. In The Merchant of Venice. Now, here's another cue line. The queen, my lord, is dead. Miss Kieran.
She should have died hereafter.
Perfect.
There was a time for such a word, and so forth. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow.
Yes, the very famous speech of whom?
That is the famous speech of Macbeth.
Yes, and what...
Play of that name by W. Shakespeare.
He does come in this evening, doesn't he? And what's been happening in the play at this point, Mr. Kieran?
Well, the clouds and the opposing soldiers are gathering around him in his castle, and he's about to come upon Macduff where they lay on.
Yes, and the queen, the death of the queen is just news that has just been brought to him. That gives us 2 out of 2. Now, how about the next? I hear him coming. Let's withdraw, my lord. I hear him coming. Let's withdraw, my lord. Mr. Kieran.
That is, I believe, from Hamlet.
Yes, it is. Now, if you were a Shakespearean actor, Mr. Kieran, how would you go
on? To be or not to be.
That's right. That's probably the most famous soliloquy in all of Shakespeare. To be or not to be, that's
Polonius, I believe, who says that to the king.
That's right.
The kill.
That's right. And that gives Hamlet his cue. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. Thank you, Mr. Merivale and Mr. Kieran. Mrs. A. Vore of Los Angeles, California, sends this one in. I think you ought to get all on this. It's not a hard question. What are the following? All American in nature. First, what is the American eagle? That is, from the bird expert's point of view, what is the American eagle?
The Latin name of it?
No,
simply,
not necessarily.
It's a large bird of prey, one of the raptor family. How much closer do you want it identified?
You're way ahead of me already.
Bald eagle.
The bald eagle, Mr. Adams. Mr. Adams has a genius of simplicity, Mr. Kieran.
Well, a golden eagle is also an American eagle.
Yeah, your answer, of course, is quite correct. Mr. Adams is simply a little more, a little simpler.
Well, which is a golden eagle or a bald eagle?
No, the bald.
Our
American eagle, Mr. Merivale, is the bald eagle. Now, what is the American plant?
A bald eagle on a gold standard, you mean.
Combining the best features of both. The American plan, gentlemen, is what? Mr. Adams, plan, P-L-A-N.
Yeah.
Mr. Merivale.
It's, you pay for your meals and your board near the hotel.
At the same time, yes. As opposed to what plan? As opposed to what other plan?
I forgot now.
European.
Yes, the European plan. That's right. Now, the American twist.
No offense.
The American twist, gentlemen, is what? Mr. Adams.
A service in tennis.
A service in tennis. Can you describe it without using your hands, Mr. Adams?
I can describe it, but I can't make it.
What's it like? Is it a very special kind of serve? What does it
do? The ball glances off the racket and goes on the other side of the court with a...
it's different.
Grain thumb.
Sounds all right to me. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3 on this American question. How about this one from Mrs. E.S. Payton of Caldwell, New Jersey? Here we go back to poetry again. I'm going to ask you to quote a few lines, a line or two, that come from a famous farewell or parting in drama or literature or poetry from 3 different sources. Any line that comes from a famous parting. We have Mr. Levant first.
I'll take the difficult one. You mean about parting is such sweet sorrow?
That's a very good one, Mr. Levant. Parting is such sweet sorrow. Comes from what poet?
Romeo and Juliet, isn't it?
How about that, Mr. Kieran, right?
Sure, Doug.
Yes, all right.
He's part of it.
I'm not fighting, Mr. Kieran. Mr. Adams?
Fare thee well and live forever.
Yeah, that's a very good one. Where's it from?
I think it's Byron.
I think it is Byron, too. Is that right, Mr. Kieran? I wouldn't be sure. Mr. Kieran says yes. Mr. Merivale.
You want another one?
I would like another one.
Cromwell, I charge thee, sing away ambition.
Where's that from?
By that sin fell the angels, Henry VIII.
Who is bidding farewell to whom?
Wolsey is bidding farewell to Cromwell.
Wolsey is bidding farewell to Cromwell. Mr. Kieran.
Well, he's bidding farewell to greatness at the start there. Farewell, a long farewell to all my greatness.
Yes, that is a famous line. There are a number of others that...
Tavern in the town.
I don't know that one.
Fare thee well, for I must leave thee.
Okay.
Hey, phone kiss.
That gives us 4 out of 3. How about this one from Leo Kaiser, Jr. of Birmingham, Alabama? Get 2 out of 3. We have an actor here who is going to recite for us 3 rather nasty speeches. All you have to do is tell me from what play these nasty speeches come. Is that quite clear, gentlemen? Let's have the first.
My great-aunt Jennifer ate a whole box of candy every day of her life. She lived to be 102, and when she'd been dead 3 days, she looked better than you do now.
Well, I have several hands. Mr. Adams?
That's from the man who came to dinner.
Who says it to whom?
Sheridan Whiteside. Says it to...
Says it to the nurse.
Says it to the nurse. What's her name, Mr. LeBant, remember?
It all depends who's playing her.
I meant the name in the play.
Of the nurse?
Yes, because she's called different things by Sheridan Whiteside in the
called
play.
Called censorable things.
Yes, we won't even mention
it. So don't even ask me.
She has a real name. Miss Preen. Miss Preen, the nurse to Sheridan Whiteside in the play The Man Who Came to Dinner. Now the second of these nasty speeches.
You're a fool. I think a woman fetching a man's slippers is a disgusting sight. Did I ever fetch your slippers? I think a good deal more of you for throwing them in my face.
Miss Merivale.
It's from Pygmalion.
It is indeed. Who was saying it to whom?
Well, the girl says it to him.
Professor Higgins to Eliza.
Yes, that's the other way around. Yeah, Higgins to Eliza Doolittle, that's right. Is the same speech used in both the play and the screen version, Mr. Merivale, you remember?
I never saw the screen version.
Did you,
Mr. LeBant? Yes, I've seen it, read it, and seen it.
Say, you've got a box of compass on it, haven't you? It's very good.
Nothing extraordinary.
All right. Be nonchalant, if you will. And the third and last of these.
What do you think women are? Flowers? Take that dame that shot the dentist. And Mrs. Vermilion. Husband comes home all worn out, hungry. Takes a spoonful of soup and falls dead. Arsenic. And Mrs. Petrus, burning her husband up in a furnace. Hey, when you've been in this business as long as I have, you'll know what women are.
How about
murderers, Borgias.
How about it, gentlemen, Mr. LeBant?
Take a guess. It sounds like front page.
Very good, Mr. LeBant. That's exactly right.
I think
that's
the editor,
right on the button.
I don't know if his real name was Burns or not.
Walter Burns is saying this to Hildy Johnson in the front page. That just gives us 3 out of 3. Now, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out $25 and 1 set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now Mr. Cross tells me he has a bone to pick with us.
It's that old bone of contention, the argument as to who buys the best tobacco. Instead of making claims, I just want to give you a few facts and figures. The first fact is simply this, that the American Tobacco Company, maker of Lucky Strike cigarettes, consistently pays higher prices to get the finer, lighter, naturally milder tobaccos. Here's an example. At Lexington, Kentucky last season, the American Tobacco Company paid 18% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 18% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. Now, this very considerable price difference may be a surprise to you, but it isn't to tobacco men. Year after year, they see Lucky's buy the finer, milder leaf and pay the price to get it. That's why the independent tobacco experts who aren't connected with any cigarette company smoke Lucky's by such an overwhelming majority. More than 2 to 1, in fact. Mr. Fadiman, does what I am saying contain any hint for smokers?
I think it does, Mr. Cross, and I have timed you at just 65 seconds. And now we'll go on with the second half of the program this evening, beginning with a question from Wallace Dace of Corpus Christi, Texas. Can you name 3 plays in which the central character is a general? Mr. LeBant, will you start us off?
The Devil's Disciple.
The Devil's Disciple. Very good. By whom?
G.B. Shaw.
And who is the general in that case?
Burgoyne.
Burgoyne is right. It's about the American Revolution.
There was no moving picture made of that. I wanted Mr. Adams.
Not yet. Perhaps it will come along. Mr. Murray.
He's not the central character, is he?
I beg pardon?
I wouldn't call him the central character.
A central character.
Oh, a big one.
I'll correct that. Make it a central character. Mr. Murray, do you have another suggestion?
Yeah, Othello.
Othello, yes, that's very good. Mr. Adams?
George Washington, in which Mr. Merivale played.
Yes, that's a very good one.
How about
right or wrong?
Thank you, Frank.
nothing worse.
I wrote the Rome, in which Mr. Merivale played. He's done nothing but general.
Merivale, Merivale, Merivale this evening. Any others in which Mr. Merivale did not play?
Bitter Tea of General Something, sir?
I don't know that it was a play, was it?
Not a play.
It was a movie, I do believe. Well, there's Valley Forge. Also, George Washington.
That's
oh, that's the one you meant. I thought you said George Washington slept here.
How about Captain Brassbound's conversion?
Not a full general, I don't think. Just a captain. St. Helena, which the central character was Napoleon, and there are a number of others. I suppose St. Joan would... Mr. Kieran, was Joan a general?
She was.
I guess she was.
Army.
Sure. How about this one from Josephine Thompson of Orange, New Jersey? Get 2 out of 3. Name the prominent bands, dance bands, that are associated with these peculiarities. In the first case, the saxophones play out of tune carefully. This means very little to me. Mr. Levant.
The Lombardos.
The Lombardos. The saxophones play out of tune carefully. Is that a good description of what happens?
Well, it's not a comprehensive, but it's noteworthy.
Mm-hmm.
They're earnest about it.
Here's another peculiarity of an eminent dance band. In this case, there's an elaborate piano style with a melodic left hand. Mr. Levant again.
Eddie Duchin.
Eddie Duchin plays that way. That's quite right. Now, how about this one? The clarinets in unison playing the melody an octave higher than the saxophones. How one would ever distinguish among these bands, I don't know.
Well, that's quite prevalent, but I think Glenn Miller started it more or less.
Glenn Miller, yes. That's apparently the band
very
most associated with it. That gives us 3 out of 3, and the rest of you gentlemen were resting on your laurels all through that question. Now, this one from Catherine Snow of Rockford, Illinois. Get 2 out of 3 if you can. Give the complete quotation, gentlemen, from which each of these sets of adjectives is taken. I'm just picking out 3 or 4 adjectives from the body of the quotation. Give me the whole one. The first set, good, tough, pure. These are not rhyme words, you understand.
Is this an ad for cereal?
No. Good, tough, pure. What's the quotation in which those three appear? Well, it's very hard, I think. The quotation itself is well known. It's from Tennyson's Sir Galahad. Does that bring it to you, gentlemen, at all? Mr. Merivale?
My strength is the strength of 10. That
yes,
one?
That's quite
because
right.
Because my heart is pure.
Yes. My good blade carves the casks of men. My tough lance thrusteth sure. My strength is the strength of 10 because my heart is pure. Well, that's rather hard. See if you can do the next one, which is somewhat harder. Here are the adjectives. Old, best, last, first. Now, they all occur in 2 or 3 lines of a famous poem. Shall I repeat them, gentlemen?
From Lewis Carroll.
No, I don't see how you get around to that.
Browning, Thing in the Morgue. What God Bless Once Prove a Curse.
Miss Merivale, you're on the right track. I will. Old, best, last, first.
Grow old along with me. The
Keep
best
going.
Is yet to be. The last of all for which the first was made.
That's perfect. Yes, it's from our poem.
It has a Jewish title.
That's right. Rabbi Ben Ezra.
Rabbi
Ben Ezra. That's very good going, Mr. Kieran. I think that's a rather tough question. Now, here's another. Royal, precious, silver. Mr. Merivale.
Well, I never knew this one. It's that thing in Richard II, John of Gaunt says about England.
Yes, a very famous.
Royals, one. Throne of Kings, this sceptered isle.
Can you go ahead with it, Miss Merivale?
No.
Can you, Miss
Merivale? Precious jewels set in a silver sea, I believe.
Precious yes, that's stone. The way it ends. Would you like to have the 4 or 5 lines of it? They're beautiful lines.
You would.
Very appropriate. I know them because I've got them down here on the card. This royal throne of kings, this sceptered isle, this earth of majesty, this seat of Mars, this other Eden, demi-paradise, this fortress built by nature for herself against the infection and the hand of war, this happy breed of men, this little world, this precious stone, Mr. Kieran, set in the silver sea, from Richard II. Well, we got 2 out of 3 on that, and I think that's very good going. It sends us on to a somewhat lighter question from Ralph L. Bancroft of Browns Mills, New Jersey. Now, in New York, it's circus time for us here. The big circus is in town, and this is a timely question. Gentlemen, hurry, 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 and give me 4 song titles that mention things seen under the big top. 4 song titles. Mr. Levant, for instance.
We're tenting under the old campgrounds, and we're camping under the old tent grounds. Which is it?
Tending tonight, I think. Is that the one you mean? Tending on the old campground. Yes, very good one. Now, I don't want you to quote these lines, and I don't want you to sing them. I just want you to give me the titles themselves. Mr. Merivale?
Oh, I don't know the title, but he floats to the air of the greatest of
Yes, the title, of course, of The Daring Young Man on the Flying Trapeze. Now, Mr. Kieran?
Hold that tiger.
Very good one. Very good. Mr. Adams?
Don't go in them lions' cage tonight, Mama Darling.
Things you know, Mr. Adams.
A song by Edna Ogg.
I'm positive. Mr. Levant?
Laugh, clown, laugh.
Laugh, clown, laugh.
I wish
very
they
good.
Would, for a change.
Strike up the band, the old gray mare. I suppose there are mares under the circus tent.
How about horses?
Oh, yes, three of them. Horses, horses, horses. Any others? Think of another one, Mr. Levant? Good morning, Mr. Zip, Zip, Zip. Isn't there a Mr. Zip in the circus? I seem to remember. Well, that gives us three or four. Here's one from Ernest L. Christmas of Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania. Get two out of three. Question about famous battles of the past. Each of these battles that I'm going to name foreshadowed the downfall of a great leader of ancient times. Who was it in each case? The first battle is Zama, Z-A-M-A. Mr. Merivale.
Hannibal.
Hannibal, defeated by whom?
Scipio Africanus.
Very good. Oh, it's marvelous. It almost sounds as if you were reading it. And in what, at what time, what date, approximately?
About 200. The canny was 215. This is just a little time after.
This was 202.
Yeah.
202 B.C.
I said 200.
Yes. Oh, good enough. On this program, that ranks as very good. Philippi. Philippi. We have Mr. Kieran.
Well, that was the defeat of Brutus and Cassius.
Yes, by whom, Mr. Kieran?
By Caesar...
Antony?
By Antony, isn't it? Antony and Octavian. And
Octavian was what I was going to say.
Octavius, young Octavius.
Yes. I think it's Octavius.
He's old by now, Mr. Adams.
The young man said. how about the date on that? Give us a date. Famous Battle of Philippi mentioned before.
Well, that was around 40 B.C., I should say.
No. You and Mr. Merivale are always 2 years apart. 42 B.C.
42
B.C. would be quite right. And the third battle, the Battle of Asculum, A-S-C-U-L-U-M, Asculum, which I may be mispronouncing mildly. Well, that is a hard one. The Pyrrhus, who won this battle from
the
Romans.
That's
Mr. Levant?
Is that the one where the Pyrrhic victory
is
derived?
Exactly. What is the Pyrrhic victory?
It's a costly victory where the victory entails practically losing everything but the victory.
That is exactly it, yes. What is Pyrrhus supposed to have said at this battle in 279 B.C.?
I wasn't around at that time.
Mr. Merivale, were you around?
I've forgotten what he said. He went back to Epirus, though. I know that.
Yeah, he did, and he made a very famous remark.
He said, one more victory like that, and I'm ruined.
That's exactly it. Very good. One more such victory, and I am lost. Well, that gives us three out of three. How about this one? This comes from Mrs. Marshall Butt of Portsmouth, Virginia. I'm sorry. That is the next card. This is the one I had in mind. From Mrs. E.W. Reeder of Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Get two out of three if you can. In what works of fiction are these messages important? The first message is, you have until 10 tonight. You have until 10 tonight. If you get this, boys, you're good.
Well, no, we're not good.
Maybe you're not good. It's from Treasure Island, and it's the message that Pew sends to Captain Billy Bones in one of the early chapters. Remember that now,
yes,
Karen?
When he's in the kitchen in the inn.
That's exactly it. Well, it's tough to pick that one up out of that long book. Well, that's one wrong. Here's another message. Dear Phil, can I see you for a minute or two as soon as possible? I'm in awful trouble. I don't know what to do. It's not money. Mr. Levant.
That's of human bondage.
Very good.
Mildred writing to Phil again.
That's right. Very good, Mr. Levant. And I think that's pretty good going, picking that one up out of that very long novel. Now, here's the next. Don't ride or dance with General Bangs, a most immoral man. Mr. Kieran.
That is from a poem by Kipling. And it's set by, I forgot the starting line.
Thing one, I'd willingly give you my all, Mr. Kieran, if I could.
And we know the worthy general from something to Motan as snowy-haired Lothario, Lieutenant General Bang. Husband on a hilltop.
Yes.
Had his heliograph tempestuously at play.
He was
sending word to his wife not to dance with the general at the Saturday night hop.
Well, I think that's pretty good, Mr. Kieran. That is not a very well-known poem of Kipling.
Oh, it's a great poem. Very funny.
What's the title of it? You've given us everything but the title, Mr. Kieran. Do you know the title?
No, I don't.
Code of Morals.
Oh, yes.
Right. Very easy title to forget.
I gave you most of the poem, though. Never
you
mind.
Certainly did. I've given you due credit for it, Mr. Kieran. How about this one? This is from W.M. Manning of Des Moines, Iowa. Get two out of three. If you had a staff of servants consisting of the following characters of literature, what job would each one hold? The first is Dvornicek. What job would he hold, Mr. Levant?
Well, he's a little better than a butler. He was practically a right-hand man in the place of seeing of Molnar.
Yes.
Thank you, dear Dvornicek, was recurrent.
That's right, very famous comic line. That's good remembering, Mr. Levant. Now, how about Digger Thomas? What position would he hold in your household, Mr. Adams?
That would be a native son.
Yes,
and he would be a chauffeur.
He would be a chauffeur. A native son by whom?
By Richard Wright.
Yes, now on the board here is a play in New York. Now, the third and last of this staff, Mrs. Danvers.
Yeah,
Mrs. Danvers. Got that?
Yeah.
We have two hands. Mr. Kieran?
She was a housekeeper.
In what?
In,
Rebecca.
Thank you, Mr. Levant. That's right. Mr. Levant had his hand up, too. And what was her character in Rebecca, Mr. Levant?
Sinister.
Oh,
sweet.
Yeah, well, I can say so. Sweet to you, sinister to Mr. Kieran. I think that's about all we have time for. We got 3 out of 3 on that fairly easy question. And now Mr. Cross is going to point out to us that the tobacco experts are present at every auction.
That's right, Mr. Fadiman. And at auction after auction, these independent tobacco experts see how consistently the American Tobacco Company pays the price to get the finer, lighter, milder leaf for Lucky's. In fact, at 119 different markets, markets that handle 96% of all the cigarette tobacco sold at auction in this country, the American Tobacco Company last season paid well above the market average, and the best we bought will go to Lucky's. Now, I gave you an example of this a few minutes ago. American paid 18% more than the market average at Lexington, Kentucky. On the same basis, we paid 20% more at Hartsville, Tennessee, 22% more at Henderson, North Carolina, 30% more at Oxford, North Carolina. Yes, at market after market, independent tobacco experts see us pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos for Lucky's. That's why, with these experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cross. Now, this evening, Lucky Strike has, with perfect cheerfulness, paid out the sum of $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Mr. Merivale, we extend our thanks to you for joining the fun this evening. As for next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will do their darndest, and we'll have two guests. The first is the eminent creator of the famous Nero Wolfe mysteries, our old friend Rex Stout, who has been with us before. And as our special extra guest, we're going to have Chief Magistrate Henry Curran, whose autobiography, Pillar to Post, has just appeared. Now remember, those who are listening, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. And if the question should happen to stump our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the recent Encyclopedia Britannica. Remember to send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now we'll listen to a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, the famous tobacco auctioneer, from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, fully interpreted, ladies and gentlemen, means Lucky's pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. With independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, warehouse men, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.